RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Rui Hachimura or Tua? That's the real question. Now, Joe Zagacki's on the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. We're going to go with Joe Zagacki here because we've already wasted his time. Joe, do you know why we're running so late and why we couldn't get to you at 3:30?
I do not. I missed it. What happened? There are big breaking
news?
I wish.
I'm embarrassed to say why we were not available for you. It was ridiculous.
You got baited. I got baited, Joe.
Yeah, he got Solana went fishing. He caught himself a Crowder, and Crowder was flapping around on the hook for 20 minutes. All right. Okay. Joe Zagacki's on the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. We'll get the headlines later this hour, and we'll do talk about it Tuesday as well. Joe will be on the call New Year's Eve from Dallas as the Canes take on Ohio State, round two of the college football playoffs. What was the atmosphere like at College Station Saturday, Joe?
Unreal. One of the great atmospheres we've ever been in. I think my ears are still ringing from the crowd noise. They never sat down. They never stopped cheering. The game was tense and edgy. And, you know, when you have my job, the number one thing is don't take your eyes off the field. And that game, I think, was so dramatic. Even though no one was scoring, you just felt like there was going to be one play here, one play there, it was going to break the game. You just could not take your eyes off the field no matter what.
And so did you learn anything? Now it's game, 13 of the damn season. But we went through the ups. I'm a we now, Joe. I don't know if you heard. I'm a we as we speak about the Canes now. But we went through the Notre Dames, Joe. We went through the Floridas. We went through the, SMUs, went through Louisville's ups and downs of it. You've seen Ruben. We've seen Carson Beck. We've seen Malachi Toney. We've seen all these guys. Did you learn anything about the team more now that you're in, like you're saying, where one play, two plays could change a game?
Yeah, I think so. I think we learned that they've got grit. I think we learned that they have got a lot of determination. I think we learned that their defense continues to get better. And as a team, I think, over the last 5 weeks, every single game, they've gotten better. This game, even though neither team was scoring, Miami only was penalized four times. I thought their tackling was really good. I thought their physicality was great. I thought their determination and all those intangibles. Tony fumbles the football. Everybody rallies around him. He bounces back. So I think we continue to learn more and more about this team. And over the last 5 weeks, I think we've seen them really come together and play as a team. Probably it could be the best 5 weeks that Miami's had in I don't know how many years, but I just think they were – I thought the game Saturday was fabulous, and I thought the heart and desire and all those intangibles that they showed along with their execution, especially on the defensive side, was just outstanding. You take a look at the last five games, they've had 24 sacks by the defense now in the last five games, and they're holding their opponents to under 10 points per game in those five games. So their defense is really, really rising.
Joe, you've been a part of every Hurricanes game that I can remember, at least. Was that the most fun you've ever had calling a Miami Hurricanes game?
Well, Solana, I would say that game was a lot of fun. It would rank right up there. Might have needed a cardiologist somewhere in the third or fourth quarter. But, you know, when you're beating Nebraska at the Rose Bowl, that's a lot of fun too. And when you're beating Florida State on a wide right, that's a lot of fun too. So I don't know if it was the most fun, but it certainly was certainly right up there. And probably, I would say, the most fun in the last 20 years.
You know, when we think about the history of the program, obviously Ohio State, that is a memory for us Canes fans, Joe, that is, what's the word I'm looking for? Triggering.
Gut-wrenching. Yeah.
So what does this game mean? Obviously, it brings you a step closer to a national championship, but there is history between these two teams when it comes to major bowl games. Like, what does New Year's Eve versus Ohio State mean?
Well, it means it's about damn time that they got a chance to even the score with Ohio State. Now, it might not be the same because it's not the championship, but what it is a chance to knock Ohio State out. You know, they're the defending champs, so a great opportunity to knock them out and give Miami a certain sense of satisfaction that we've been waiting for over the last 23 years. It's never going to bring back what happened at the Fiesta Bowl. And if you think about that, Hawk, how that changed the course of history for the University of Miami and maybe how many lives it changed, who knows what would have happened if they were back-to-back champions, if that call goes their way. But what New Year's Eve means is a chance, I think, for Miami to prove that they belong with the very best. If they win this game against Ohio State, that'll be a hell of an achievement because Ohio State is at the top of their game, not only on the field, but recruiting and coaching and all of those things that make up a great program. They're the gold standard right now. So it would mean that Miami has a gold standard program.
And Joe, I'm wrong. That's when I came to the other side when the Texas A&M game, when I figured I was wrong, because I don't know if it was my SEC bias. I was seeing Texas A&M score, 40, 38 points a game and all they were doing late in the season. But the trenches won, obviously, Texas A&M with the low scoring game. That was a grown man beat 'em up football game, especially in the second half. And we've talked about on the show how Shannon Dawson and Mario, and they say Carson Beck came up to Shannon and was like, "Hey, let's just run it straight at him and see what happens." Kind of approach. Is that the cheat code, which really isn't a cheat code, Joe? But is that what Miami has to do now? Is that what the Canes have to do? Like, cut Mesidor Ruben Bain loose, run the ball straight at him. That's the formula for success moving forward. Or do you think, could Ohio State get into one of those where, Ohio State can score as well, where we might have to go 35-32 type game?
Yeah, well, I don't know if Miami wants to get into a 35-32 game with Ohio State. That'd be tough sledding with that pass rush and their defensive line. In the game on Saturday, I give Beck a lot of credit. Again, I think some guys know how to win. He's 35-5, so he gets credit for the victory. He didn't turn the ball over. The other guy turned it over three times for Texas A&M. Certainly, Miami feels like they've got an advantage in most games in the trenches. In this game against Ohio State, that's going to be a challenge for sure. Ohio State up front on their defensive line, their crown jewel is their defensive line. They don't give ground in the run game. That's what makes their run defense go. They've got some big, powerful guys there. Caden McDonald, Kenyatta Jackson from Chaminade, Tywon Malone, and Caden Curry. Those guys don't budge in the running game, so that's going to be a hell of a battle. It's going to be big for Brockermeyer as well, the Miami center. And then they do a really good job of camouflaging what they want in the secondary. They do a good job putting pressure on the quarterback, and then do a really good job disrupting your passing game. But the strength for Miami's been in the trenches, so they got to rely on that. But I think, Channing, offensively, Beck is going to have to hit some passes. They're going to have to complete some plays to loosen up the Ohio State defense. I think they're going to have to complete some passes early in the game in order to get to their run game.
Joe, what's the travel schedule for the Hurricanes? I'm assuming there's a lot of pomp and circumstance with this bowl game. So when are they heading to Dallas, and what's going to go on?
Yeah, it's not like the old bowl games when you left like Christmas Day or the day after. We're going to leave on Sunday afternoon, I think. I really don't know what time. But sometime on Sunday, it says on the Cotton Bowl schedule, Miami arrival at 5:30. Then they have a media day on Monday and a media day on Tuesday. And, you know, you play on Wednesday. So these bowl games used to be a 5 or 6 or 7 day affair with all kinds of activities. And now it's much more business. You've got a big game. You get there. You have some media responsibilities. You get a practice in and then kick it off and try to get to the Final Four.
We were talking earlier because when we started at 2 o'clock today, the Boca Raton, the Bush's Beans Boca Raton Bowl was kicking off at 2 o'clock. And we were talking about how, you know, every bowl game used to feel bigger. This season, bowl season, used to feel a lot more special than it does. Did you watch any of the Boca Raton Bowl this afternoon?
You know, I saw it come on, and first I thought, was it live or is it a replay? And so I started to watch the first couple of minutes, but really I've been watching Ohio State, to be quite honest with you. So we don't have a lot of time here. Everything jammed up pretty good. And so
I have a question regarding the Bush's Baked Beans Boca Raton Bowl, and it doesn't have anything to do with football. Do you like baked beans?
I do, and I like Bush's baked beans. I like going to Publix, and they give you that combination of a chicken, and you can get beans.
Oh, you're talking about as a side? So that's a go-to side for you, the baked beans?
Well, it depends. It depends what it comes with. I mean, I'm not just going to eat beans solo.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you?
Would a baked bean be like a top 10 side? You have fries, mashed potatoes, baked potatoes, mac and cheese. There's so many sides. You're not going baked beans over 15 other sides, are you?
No. Let me explain this to you for me. You give me steak and mashed potatoes, and I'm pretty good. I'm happy. So I'm going to lean toward steak, mashed potatoes, and I don't even know it. Maybe broccoli for a third side with steak. But baked beans would probably be like down the list somewhere, you know, at midway on my list.
Would it surprise you to know that at 56 years old, I've never had baked beans?
That's impossible. How is that possible?
That's what I said.
Very possible. Yeah, I mean,
You don't have beans with hot dogs or chicken or barbecue?
I'm a strange bird, Joe. I don't know if you've
noticed.
Well,
I already knew that about you, Hawk.
You hadn't noticed that over the course of our years-long friendship. No, I've never had baked beans. They don't look appealing to me.
Well, I'm not going to talk you into them. That's like impossible. But you could talk to Al Michaels. Al Michaels has never eaten a vegetable.
That is true. That is true. Do you know, just this year, 2025, the first time I've ever tried lentils?
Lentil beans?
Yeah, is that a bean? Is lentils a bean?
Jesus, I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Why does he not know this?
Well, I took down, I went to my cabinet to see what beans we have in the house because we don't have baked beans. So we have, and we owe Jimmy an apology from earlier. He said chickpeas, and we made fun of them. Chickpeas are indeed garbanzo beans. So, Jimmy, I apologize for making fun of you when you said chickpeas were one of your favorite bean. They are indeed garbanzo beans,
no,
and I have a can of them in the house.
Hawk, he said chick beans.
He did say beans first.
I said chickpea beans.
No, you said chick beans.
I think he did say chick beans first.
Chick beans. Come on,
we
Jimmy.
Also
I'm
have black
lying.
Beans. Black beans in the house. I like black beans. We have.
Why would you like black beans and not baked beans?
Bingo.
Baked beans are like, they're brown and they have like that brown gravy on the bottom.
Why do you say brown? So disgusting.
Brown's not a good food call. Tell me what food you love that's brown.
Well, I like baked beans, but I don't like black.
Steak's not brown.
Steak is brown.
It's black.
Black steak? What? How do you get? What temperature you like your steak? Black?
You gotta grill it. If I had a brown steak, I think I was at Riker's. We've got organic garbanzo beans, Joe. You have those in the house?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure that I would eat them. I think they're supposed to be good for you, but I probably would. I'd probably pass on that.
And we have lentils, Trader Joe lentils. I hesitated to bring this can over to the camera because I wasn't certain if lentils were a bean, and I didn't want to find myself in a Jimmy situation. But I have been I have been made aware from Crowder's outrage that lentils are indeed a bean.
It's actually a legume.
Oh, what is the difference, Joe, between a bean and a legume?
Sounds like a Jeopardy question.
All right. Well, I think we covered a lot of ground.
Are you on food stamps?
Why? What's that? Bush's and Trader Joe's?
Man, listen, Trader Joe's, your little cabinet's terrible.
Trader Joe's? That's good beans right there. You're not going to find better lentils than Trader Joe's.
Yeah, TJ's has good beans.
Oh,
man.
You got to come over here on Davey with me and Joe. We got some items for you over here on our house.
You don't buy the Trader Joe's lentils, Joe?
No, but beans are legumes. They're the same. They're in the same family.
I don't know about that. I think legumes are in the pea family, Joe.
I'm going with my final answer.
All right, fair enough. By the way, Joe, Louisville is leading Toledo 7-3 in the Bush's Beans Boca Raton Bowl in the third quarter.
Oh, that's a barn burner. Oh, yeah.
We have a barn burner sound. Inexplicably ready to go at any moment. We have a barn burner sound. All right, so Joe, do you want to predict the Miami Ohio State game before we let you go here?
Oh, predict the Miami Ohio State game. Well, I'm sure the hell not going to pick Ohio State, I can tell you that.
Hey, how about this? There cannot be a flag thrown more than 1 second after a play. Period, end of story.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would have been a good rule. Is Terry Porter still around? Is he alive? Where is he?
Terry Porter was just inducted into the officiating Hall of Fame. No joke.
Really? That is a joke.
That's insane, right? He is alive and well. And he went in this year, I believe it's the Ohio or the Oklahoma Officiating Hall of Fame. Oklahoma Officiating Hall of Fame.
Well, there you go. There's why he threw the flag, the Oklahoma Officiating Hall of Fame. He was mad that Miami beat Oklahoma all those years. He got his revenge.
And he got it. Joe, who? This is a crazy question. I just thought about it. Julian Sand is not impressive to me. That's the Ohio State quarterback. He's pretty good, but he's not. I don't think he's anything close to what Cam Ward was, I'd say, you know, to put a crazy comparison. Is he better than Carson Beck? Who's the best quarterback going into this game as you break down the film?
Oh, I think Carson Beck is the better quarterback overall.
Too.
You know, saying I think watching him, I think his numbers are off the charts, 31 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. I don't think he's that mobile. He's a bit elusive in the pocket. He had a big game against Wisconsin where he threw the ball for almost 400 yards, but he's still a redshirt freshman. They list him at 6'1". I don't know if he's 6'1", but what he does have is Jeremiah Smith, and he's pretty good.
He's okay.
Matter of fact, I'm not so sure that I could throw the ball to Jeremiah Smith.
That was kind of my – Joe, as I watched him, they were breaking down. Even the Heisman video stuff, I was – like, this dude's just throwing up the ball to great players. Like, he's not threading needles. So I'm glad you said it because I was going to take a hard stand on Carson Beck really being the best quarterback in this game.
You know, they don't have a lot. It's interesting. I mean, they had great guys on the outside. Jeremiah Smith, Carnell Tate. Brandon Innes, who's from down here. Did you coach against him at some point, Channing Innes?
Ennis was one of the best athletes I've ever seen play football, and he's the third receiver at Ohio State, which is crazy to me. But it makes sense when you have Tate and damn Smith in front of them, Joe.
Yeah, and then they're relying on Bo Jackson, really one running back, no relation, but Bo Jackson's a freshman running back. They're relying on him. The other two running backs don't get a lot of carries. One of them didn't play in the Big Ten championship game. So they're kind of riding one running back, but they're going to throw the ball to those wide receivers, and the tight ends are going to be tough. Kid Max Clair, he's got 43 catches, a 243-pound, 6'5" tight end. That's going to be a tough challenge for Miami as well.
Hey, Joe, where the hell did DBJ pull out "Muchas gracias, el niño Jesús"? He botched it. He said "mucho gracias," but it was epic anyways. Where the hell did that come from?
I thought it came from you guys.
No. No, we're as shocked as you and Victor. Where did that come from?
I asked him, what did it mean?
Well,
I don't know.
He was giving thanks for baby Jesus, which, by the way, just amazing. But, like, el bebé Jesús, el niño Jesús. I know people call Malachi Tony baby Jesus. So, like, it all kind of, it worked, and it was epic. But we never gave him that. And I don't know, I didn't know DBJ knew more than hola and gracias in Spanish.
I was quite surprised myself. My eyes almost popped out. I thought you guys gave it to him. No. I thought, man, successful mission. He must have accomplished something here with that.
Joe, we love you. You saved our show today. We had a rough 3 o'clock hour, but I feel like we're back on track because of you in the 4 o'clock hour. Louisville, by the way, up 14-3 now in the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl, Joe.
I saw that. He just turned it on.
Yeah.
I saw Louisville score a touchdown, yeah.
We'll watch the end of this barn burner together, huh?
I'm going to probably go back and watch some more Buckeyes of Ohio State. So we'll be ready to go on New Year's Eve. It's right around the corner. It's knocking right on the door.
Yeah.
Week from tomorrow.
It is indeed. So you can listen to the game right here Wednesday night. 3 o'clock is when our pregame starts, and then game will kick off at 7:30 Wednesday night, New Year's Eve. Joe Zagacki, Don Bailey Jr., they will have the call for you, and you will hear it here on 104.3 FM WQAM, executive produced by Victor Bermudez, the best in the business. Thank you, Joe.
All right, fellas, thank you. Appreciate it. Have a nice Christmas.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
We got a special guest. A guy you might know from Deep Dive with Chris Perkins joins us this morning from covering the Miami Dolphins. Perk, good morning, brother. How you doing?
Oh, man, gentlemen, I'm good. I'm trying to get a head start on the Pro Bowl story. The Pro Bowl team is going to be announced at 10, so I'm putting Achan and Jordan Brooks in my story right now. Maybe Aaron Brewer sneaks in, maybe Jake Bailey, the punter, but I'm focusing on Achan and Jordan Brooks. We'll see if they both make it.
Those two should be in. The only thing that could hold Jordan Brooks back is the team has not had a great year overall, but I hope they look at those numbers individually because he has been – and that guy's playing hurt. I was saying earlier, Perk, I was telling Dave, can't even get mad at him when they get him one-on-one against a real good pass-receiving running back like he had last game. He's just been so good. He's playing hurt. But, boy, that guy just makes play after play after play. I'm with you. You hope Achan and Jordan Brooks are in for sure. But you're right about Brewer, man. Brewer has had one hell of a season at center.
Yeah, he's athletic, he's tough, he's smart. You know, I asked Mike McDaniel about him yesterday, and he was saying that they're able to do things in the run game with Brew that they aren't able to do with other centers just because of those traits that he has, the toughness and the athleticism and the smart. So
He led a sweep on Sunday, and maybe he's been doing it all year, but I noticed on Sunday.
See him down
that,
the field?
Yeah.
The guy's running down the sideline on that run, and he's right next to him.
Yeah. But yeah. Brooks and Achane are all pro players, not just Pro Bowl. I think they're the big one. The Pro Bowl is sort of – it's nice.
It's good for incentives either way.
Yeah, that's true.
You get that money either way. Hey, you ready to get to the big one? And I get it all the time. Perk, you're pretty open about how you stand on it. Is Mike McDaniel's job safe? Do you think they've already made up their mind or it's still open?
I would think they've probably already made up their mind. And I wrote last week that I just don't understand the thinking. If Chris Greer is gone and Tua has been demoted, how do you keep Mike McDaniel? And it's not personal against Mike. I look at a couple of things. This team hasn't leveled up. You guys know I always like to cite the stat that they're 4-20 against playoff teams. This year, they're 1-4, and it could be 1-5, depending on who makes the playoffs. And then I just think that scheme and philosophy are the things that have held this offense back, that it was so Tyreek. And you look at when they went to the dink and dunk last year, they finished 6-3. You look at when they go to the run game this year, they win 5 out of 6. That offensive system needed to be opened up. So I just think that Mike has had a bigger hand in holding up this team than Chris Greer or Tua.
We went into this. I remember you say. I think Chris Greer is number one.
The number one problem's gone.
Yeah.
The guy is the biggest problem and has been, and you give him a hall pass, Perk. I don't know why you keep doing that unless he's sending you some good stuff.
I don't give him a hall pass. I think that he got you the best talent that you've had in 20 years. And now it wasn't Super Bowl winning talent, but he did. And look, and me and Hyde have kind of disagreed on this, but what are the two or three best things Mike McDaniel has done? Because with Tua, if he fixed him, I don't know. I think he just told him, throw it to Tyreek. Really? I mean, I don't mean to belittle Mike. But, you know, aside from that, what's on his list of accomplishments?
Well, I mean, there's the fixing Tua. It wasn't a small thing for this franchise, remember. Now, to compound that, he fell in love with Tua too much in the contract and all
right.
That.
Well,
we get that. But
that
when you're saying he turned there was 22-23, the offense was hope. Right, I mean, there was
fun pass offense to watch.
Yeah, so
Tua's making the throws, but he ain't making them now. I'll tell you that.
But I would say in 2023 they went 1-6 against playoff teams and averaged 16 points
per
game.
I can't argue.
I think it's time to clean slate, start all over. The question is, where do you go? It's easy for us to say, okay, get rid of everybody. Yes. Now, where do they go? That's the harder problem to answer, and it's one we really don't have to answer in our jobs, but Steve Ross does.
Hey, let me ask you.
And we've all discussed this. Who's making the decision? Who does Steve Ross trust to make the decisions on general manager and head coach hires? That's almost as important as who they hire, who's making the decision on those hires.
Let me ask you a question. Champ Kelly, who I've spent time with, and I really like him. I like him because he's very honest and open with me and talks to me, which is something new with some of the people over there. But Brandon Shore, interesting. His name keeps getting brought up that he could have a piece of this GM job from the side of – it better not be player personnel because he doesn't know anything about that. But from the other, the finance and understanding the cap and the NFL stuff that comes in to make sure we're doing everything, you know, within league rules. Where does Brandon Shore fit in this whole thing going forward?
You know, I've heard that he's gaining power in the organization, and I wrote something on him last year in April of 2024. But, you know, look, he made the Athletic did a 40 top 40 under 40 in the NFL a couple of years ago. Brandon Shore made that list. I think he's 39 years old right now. He already oversees security, video, analytics, which you know Mike is huge with on analytics. He oversees the sod farm up north, wherever it is, in Palm Beach or whatever. And that's along with his financial duties, you know, of being the salary capologist. His door was like two doors down from Chris Greer's door. He keeps a list of personnel in the NFL so that when Chris Greer would go to him and say, hey, what about this guy? Brandon Shore didn't have to go do extensive research. He already knows about these guys. He keeps up with players in the NFL. So that's not a GM job. It's not personnel job.
Yeah.
But it's showing some knowledge and responsibility. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's a voice that Steve Ross is gaining more and more trust in.
I agree.
And somebody in the organization who could have a louder voice.
I agree. The organization loves him. I totally agree with you. I don't disagree. And I'm guessing this offseason he probably had to tell Chris a couple of times no about, hey, we spent a lot of money, Chris, last year. We can't do it again, man. I can't. I'm kind of responsible for this cap going forward. It's going to fall under me. We can't do it. Right?
I was told he warned them about spending all this money. And now you look, they're in salary cap hell.
And he was right.
And he's right. So if you're Steve Ross, okay, well, who am I listening to? The guy? Maybe that. But his world is money and capology, sort of like Andy Ellisberg with the Heat, which he has his lane to stay in. He's not getting into, we should draft this guy or that guy. He's getting,
could be,
if you make this decision, here's his cap implications. That's his world.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, what do you think happens with Champ Kelly, who's interim? He's all in right now. I mean, he's working. He's changing some things that they do. I think we're more into background checks now for these guys when they come, and he's had meetings with the scouts around the country. What's your thoughts on, I mean, he's got to have some kind of, how long before they make a decision on him?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they've got to make that decision right after the season. I'll say this, the view from 30,000 feet and talking to players in the locker room is they really like Champ Kelly. Champ, if you watch before games, you know that section down there by the tunnel where the players' families are, you see Champ down there mixing with everybody, mixing with the players' families, mixing, you know, talking to Drew Rosenhaus, who's always down there, talking to the players when they come down there to visit family. You see him out at practice all the time. And you know, you would see Greer out at practice also. But Champ is really visible. He's shaking hands. He's dapping players up. He's got a big smile on his face.
He's an emotional guy. He gets fired up.
Correct.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and Minka had told me you see him in the weight room, and you see him all over the facility. Very personable guy, very well liked. And if that kind of stuff matters, Champ is doing a really good job of making a positive impression around there. I don't know how you judge him because he doesn't have kind of authority to make a whole lot of moves, right? At the time that he came in, you know, you're right around trade deadline. You don't have a lot of time to impact the team, but just from a personable personality standpoint, people love him in that building and in that locker room. So if that matters, you can check that box off. That's going to work hugely in his favor.
So if you're hiring a GM from start, is he the guy? In other words, if right now they're going to, I'm guessing a new coach, new quarterback, new front office, if you're looking around the league, is he the number one guy you'd want? That's what Steve Ross has to decide.
That is what he has to decide, and I have no idea on that. You know, you've pointed out some stuff on Champ Kelly, Dave, as far as his, you know, his background and where he's come from. I mean, he's qualified, but where is he on that list of being qualified? Yeah. Is he number one? Is he number four? Is he number six? I have no idea. I really don't know.
Hey, Perk, looking ahead a little bit, I know it's not too early. Once you're out of the playoffs, nothing's too early. If the Finns, who are going to pick as of right now, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 in that area if they keep losing, if Mendoza or Moore, if they really like him a lot, you jump up and do whatever it takes to get one of those two guys.
You're coming into Perk's wheelhouse right now.
We
go back and forth on this.
If they like him. Now, they got to like him. And by the way, 13 better sign off on it. No more. No more. Like, 13 needs to sign off on it. But go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. That would be great to have Marino's blessing, wouldn't it? But, Joe, I'm not sure that you have set a quarterback up to succeed on the Dolphins in 2026. In other words, I could envision Mendoza, let's just say Mendoza coming in here. By the way, Pro Football Focus, in their mock draft that they released yesterday, they have a scenario where the Dolphins trade with the Giants for the number one pick and the Dolphins take Mendoza. But I could see a scenario, you bring Mendoza in here and the first thing you start saying, ooh, there's no pass protection. There's no offensive line. He's getting killed. Why not make sure you have the infrastructure, pass protection, run game, defense, so that you can give your quarterback the best chance to succeed? Next year seems to be a better quarterback draft class than this year. I wouldn't force myself to fall in love with Mendoza from Indiana, Dante Moore from Oregon, Ty Simpson from Alabama, because I'm just not sure. And we have to see with, you know, Senior Bowl and Combine and all that kind of stuff. But right now, I'm not sure that any of those guys are that guy. To me, right now, the smarter choice would be to continue to develop the trenches, and then next year see where you are as far as the quarterback. You're in good position with this draft, a first-round pick, a second-round pick, and three third-round picks. You can get yourself some good help, especially in the trenches. Right now, I'm thinking that's probably the smarter way to go rather than forcing yourself to fall in love with a quarterback and bring somebody in here who's probably going to get crushed for a year or two.
All right, so you like your left tackle and right tackle right now? Do you come back next year? Patrick Paul for sure at left tackle. What about right tackle with Austin Jackson?
Boy, the health. It's the health. But he's maybe the best run blocker on that offensive line. I mean, it may be Aaron.
He just misses games. If he could play all the time, we wouldn't have this conversation. Yep. That would have never been said.
Correct. But that's a major concern. His health is a major concern. So, Joe, maybe you take a right tackle in the third round, something like that, and you focus more on interior offensive line up high in the draft, because James Daniels might be leaving you a void there. You need some more run stuffers. I know that you got Kenneth Grant and Jordan Phillips and Zeke Biggers, but you really can't have enough butt-kicking defensive linemen. So,
no, I don't want any more. You and I disagree. I don't want any more.
Here's the point.
By the way, I don't want to go jumping off over the offensive line. Bring the same damn group of guys back, and if you like Austin Jackson, that's a huge one. I love the Mendoza thing. My God, can you imagine a press conference? You want to get everybody lathered up coming back home? Oh, my gosh. You hear his press conferences. They don't sound like Tua's.
But, Joe, is he set up to succeed on this team in 2026? When you look at the roster, and we don't know who the GM and the coach are going to be, so we don't know the offensive system, but do you really think he'd be set up to succeed if he joined the Dolphins in 2026?
Perk, look at this. New England, Drake May last year had zero help around him, no offensive line, no playmakers. And yet he developed fine, and no coaching staff. Then they bring it. They got help around him this year. And the question is, how good is the quarterback? Not help around him. In my thoughts.
Me too.
If Mendoza's that guy, if he's great, if you think he's great, then go up for him. But if you think he
wants to really screw it up by getting a bunch of big guys in the draft early on, with people going, "Boy, we got another 300-pounder. How many freaking guys do we need?" Perk,
okay,
you're the best.
You know
man.
What? I'm going to be in here on this show in October. You guys are going to be going, "Boy, you got no protection."
Hey, I'm going to have my hand down going, "I never said that. I don't remember saying that, Perk." Hey, Perk, thank you.
Hey, I'll be saying that about quarterback, too, so it'll go both ways. We'll all have plausible deniability.
Hey, Perk, have a good one today. Deep Dive with Chris Perkins and Dave Hyde coming up at noon. So thank you so much, buddy.
All right, we'll see you guys.
All right.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Nice enough to join us earlier before the holidays kick in here. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk joins us. And Mike, I got to ask you, the Mike McDaniel stuff, ESPN and NFL Network all over the place, that Mike's secure, Mike's not secure. How do you look at Mike McDaniel's job now with two games left in the regular season?
I think it's premature until we know who the GM is going to be. Now, maybe they know who they're going to hire, and they know that that person will keep Mike McDaniel, and maybe that's the genesis of the report that came from the network that the Dolphins partially own. When NFL Network and ESPN are at odds, I always consider the fact that the person who reports whatever was reported by NFL Network is paid 1/32nd by the team about whom the person is reporting. That's a factor. That's a factor. Because if you're wrong about that, you got a bigger problem than if you're wrong about it at ESPN.
So just to follow up to that, I'm confused now. So ESPN is now running NFL Network, and how's that work when it comes to getting information? You got ESPN, I think, works more on the agents. I think NFL Network, as you said, gets more from the teams directly. And how's this whole thing work out?
Oh, they work the agents too. And look, this is a little bit inside baseball, but it's fascinating, I think. Anytime you see an NFL Network reporter say or tweet anything favorable about a player that seems a little off, like last week Ian Rappaport tweeted that Devin White is a candidate for comeback player of the year. He's not even listed on the odds that go like 50 guys deep. That's a favor to the agent in exchange for future consideration. I'm serious.
I love this. I was talking earlier about NFL Network is the PR wing of the NFL. Yeah. I'm glad you're telling this,
Mike. And the agent community. You can't fully do the job if you don't have an in with the agents, because a lot of times the agents will tell you things the teams won't. So you have to have both bases covered. And, you know, the various times that Adam Schefter will possibly step in something that causes a problem for him, like the Sharon Moore stuff. Remember that when he was on First Take?
Right.
Right. I mean, the first thing we go to is who represents Sharon Moore, and what, you know, do you periodically have to take one, right, that you know or should know is going to be a problem for you, all in the name of maintaining that pipeline? And think about it. Like yesterday, and I'm probably being too candid because it's Christmas and I've been into the eggnog. I haven't been. Not yet. I hate eggnog. Whatever the booze is in eggnog, just give me that straight. I mean, come on. We don't need it to be in a milkshake. I don't need a spiked milkshake for crying out loud.
I actually like it. You're a bad man, Mike.
So anyway, I've never tried it because the name itself is unappetizing to me. Right? I don't know what nog is, but I'm not doing it to my egg.
So while I'm
still in the mood to say this, yesterday Tom Pelissero was clearly tweeting the favorable side of the DK Metcalf situation, the stuff that undoubtedly came from DK Metcalf's agent. And who had, before anyone else, by 2 minutes, who had that DK Metcalf was being suspended? But the reality is, 98% of the stuff that gets reported is stuff that's going to be announced eventually, if not momentarily, by the teams. And Miles Simmons, who works for us at PFT, he used to work for the Rams. And he has said on PFT Live or PFT PM that at the Rams, they would tell them, okay, here's how it's going to go. Schefter's going to report it, and then 5 minutes later, we're going to tweet it. So that's how coordinated it is. That's how the game is played. because if you have that relationship with the reporter is less likely to turn a poison pen toward you. And the reporter becomes more likely to be managed. And a lot of the stuff we see from ESPN and NFL Network, a lot of the stuff we get is what they want us to know. Now, they're venturing into a territory where I don't know what they want us to know. And for now, ESPN doesn't operate NFL Network. That hasn't been approved yet. They're still separate. They're eventually going to be joined together, and who knows what it's going to look like and how it's going to operate. For now, though, the guys who work for NFL Network are paid by the NFL. The folks who work for ESPN are paid by ESPN, and there's a firewall. But the NFL is going to own 10% of ESPN if this deal goes through, and that's something that they hope happens in 2026.
Yeah, I've always thought there'd be a good role in somewhere in social media for a translator of media reports, just exactly what you're doing. But that's a side venture.
They get so mad when we do it, Dave. It's okay that they do it, but they get mad when someone says, hey, this is what they're doing.
Yeah, right. I love that. Hey, part of the Dolphin conversation, too, is who would be available. And looks like Mike Tomlin's safe. I can't even believe we're saying Mike Tomlin's safe in Pittsburgh. But now Jim Harbaugh is up for, or John Harbaugh, John excuse Harbaugh. Me, yeah. Is he safe in Baltimore? Which I can't even believe we're asking, but is that a possibility?
Well, and here's the reality. The Ravens and Harbaugh have been together for 18 years, and a lot of the stuff that came up after the Steelers were embarrassed at home by the Bills 3 weeks ago, they gave up more rushing yards at home than they had in 50 years. It was the Bills 50 years ago. O.J. Simpson and West Virginia great Jim Braxton combined for over 300 yards on the first home game, 1975, the first game the Steelers played after winning their first Super Bowl, and they still won the Super Bowl that year after getting gashed the way they did. But that was a low point for Tomlin. They were chanting fire Tomlin during the game. They booed the renegade moment where everybody's supposed to get fired up and wave their terrible towels and, you know, propel the team to victory. But that was as bad as I've ever seen it in Pittsburgh under Mike Tomlin. And since then, they've won three games in a row. Now, they got an assist from the officials against the Ravens. Steelers fans don't like it, but it's true. Three controversial calls all went the Steelers' way. They were all bad calls, in my opinion. They all went the Steelers' way. That helped them win the game. But then they handled the Dolphins, as we know. And look at what they did on Sunday. That was their best game of the year in Detroit. To go in there against a desperate Lions team and win the game, that takes Tomlin completely and totally out of any discussion about a change. Unless for some reason he decides he's had enough, which I don't think he has. I think he wants to keep going. He's got one of the best jobs in football. Harbaugh is in the same boat, and there have been times over the past 18 years where it's felt kind of awkward going into the offseason, and there's been a question as to whether or not the two sides are going to separate. And I think that question's back on the table. And the way Harbaugh talked about it yesterday, you know, he's got the confidence that comes from, number one, entering an industry where you know there's a good chance that once you get into it, you're going to be moving every year from one job to the next. He's been there 18 years. He's been there a generation. And, you know, if it's over, it's over. And I also think he's got the confidence of knowing, and this is the kind of stuff that happens behind the curtains that we don't know about. The agents talk to the owners, the GMs, the people who will be hiring coaches. I think they know Harbaugh will land somewhere else. And he could be in play for any of the jobs that are available in this cycle if the end has truly come in Baltimore, if it's time for a mutual parting. And it would be funny to say the least because, you know, there's a belief Lamar Jackson would like to get back to Miami. Now, good luck making that happen while they're dealing with the Tua cap hit over the next 2 years.
Yeah.
But maybe there's a John Harbaugh, Lamar Jackson reunion in Miami one of these days. That is a very small percentage of happening, but you know, crazier things have happened just this week.
Yeah, by the way, we've had our share of crazy stuff here recently, no question about it. So DK Metcalf swings at a fan. Everybody's had a chance to see it. And Metcalf has come out, or his agents come out and said the N-word was said to him, the C-word was, whatever it is, he punches the guy. He gets suspended 2 games. He's going to appeal that. You think anything happens, or he's going to miss the rest of the regular season, Mike?
Here's the key difference between the usual suspensions we hear about during the season and this one. Most of the suspensions are a result of a penalty imposed for on-field violations. And for on-field violations, it goes to a hearing officer. There are three guys who are jointly hired and paid by the league and the union. It's not truly independent, but it's not the NFL handling the appeal of the decision the NFL's already made. In this case, they characterized it as conduct detrimental to the league, and the commissioner or whoever the commissioner handpicks to handle the appeal will be doing it. So basically, the league has made the decision, and the league will handle the appeal. And there's no way that they came to that conclusion yesterday without running it by the guy whose name is on every football. And that's the guy who's ultimately responsible for the appeal. So he's going to change his mind? No, it's going to be upheld. And we've outlined the potential financial ramifications. They are massive. If the Steelers want to get out from under this contract and not pay DK Metcalf another penny, they can. We don't know what they want because we don't know what goes on behind the scenes there. But we know Mike Tomlin has dealt with some problematic players over the years. We don't know if DK Metcalf has been a pain in their butt from the moment he walked through the door. We just don't know. So it's a huge deal, and it speaks to so many different layers and levels of issues. Like, why do teams, and I think other teams do, but the Steelers clearly didn't, not have an apparatus in place to keep a guy from walking over to the stand and grabbing a fan by the shirt and yanking him down? And if you don't take severe action now, it creates a massive potential liability risk for the NFL, because the next time it happens and the guy gets pulled over the railing and breaks his neck, or if that punch lands squarely and does the Jake Paul two spots of a broken jaw, like, right, you've got a massive lawsuit. And part of the lawsuit, part of the process, part of the argument will be you didn't do anything to DK Metcalf when he did it. You didn't send a message to the players that this isn't acceptable. So they need to go back. Any team that doesn't have two-way security, it's not enough to keep the fans from coming out of the stands and going after the players. They have to keep the players from going into the stands or approaching the stands and initiating contact with the fans. And that was the problem. There's so much hatred and vitriol and inappropriate comments made by fans. And if you hear something that you think is over the line, you got to go find somebody in security, point out the fan, and get the fan out of there. You don't go grab the fan's shirt. And the NFL has to take a hard line here. And it doesn't surprise me they did it. They have to uphold it because there are bigger issues at play. But, man, the Steelers better have people in the bench area who are there to grab a player who starts walking toward the sideline.
I think every team is on notice for that now. Oh, yeah. But what's Phillips Rivers' reward for this season if he keeps it going? The Hall of Fame, comeback player of the year, or a spot on a team next year?
Right? Well, I don't know that he wants to play next year, and I don't know that other teams are going to be clamoring for him. I mean, he was available and has been available for a reason. He retired and he was out for 5 years. The Hall of Fame stuff, and it's funny, and I understand, I get it. Like when a network's broadcasting a game and they've had access to the player and they're trying to be positive. Yep. It's Christmas week. You got Troy Aikman acting like he's a no-brainer Hall of Famer. He's not a no-brainer Hall of Famer.
I agree too.
He did not walk away from the bronze bust as it was being carved. Right? He wasn't going to get in this year. I don't know when he gets in. I don't know if he gets in. He played at a time with Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees. They're all going to get in. Eli Manning's had to wait. He won two Super Bowls during Philip Rivers' career. Rivers never went to one. And look, I know guys have gotten in without winning a Super Bowl, but they have had historic careers. They have retired with every record in their back pocket, like Dan Marino. I don't think Philip Rivers was getting in, and I think when the 5 years reruns, because now he's got to wait at least 5 years again, it's going to be multiple times before he's taken seriously. There's just too many guys that get in as it stands, and there's too many guys clamoring to get in. And when you're, what, fifth, sixth on the list of the best quarterbacks of your era, kind of hard to get in.
Yeah. Hey, so I'm going to take you back to that Steelers-Lions game, those two calls at the end. There's been a pet peeve going on, and the Patriots just destroyed us with that offensive pick that was run into. You run into the defender, and the defensive backs run into each other, and it's an accidental, or was it on purpose? And they make that. I think it's the hardest call to make, the offensive pick or pass interference. What were your thoughts on that play? And they never, I mean, it could go either way every time it's called.
Well, and Devin McCourty, who played defensive back for the Patriots from 2010 through 2021, 2022, he was telling us in the viewing room as we were discussing those calls, because the league put out a pool report on both of the offensive pass interference calls at the end of the game. He said that they used to not call that pick play, but now that they do, the defensive backs sell it when they get hit, and the receivers need to do a better job of making it look inadvertent. If you watch what Isaac Teslaw did, he dropped his shoulder. He dropped the shoulder. You're begging to get called for OPI. That's a rookie mistake, literally, because he is a first-year player. You can't drop your shoulder into the guy, or you're going to get called 10 out of 10 times unless they just don't see it. So I think both of the calls were right. Where they really screwed up the Lions-Steelers end of game, they said in the pool report that really but for the offensive pass interference that Amon-Ra St. Brown clearly committed on Jalen Ramsey to create separation.
Yep.
That, but for that, it would have been a touchdown, which is ridiculous, because if his forward progress wasn't stopped, I don't know when forward progress is stopped. I mean, he was clearly stopped. He's falling down after forward progress is stopped, and he desperately throws the ball back to Jared Goff, who runs it in. The end result is, if they hadn't called pass interference, that would have been a touchdown, and the Lions would have won that game.
Wow, that would have been a wild one. Hey, before we let you go, we've had some great stories this year. The Patriots from 4-13 to 12-3. The Jags, Trevor Lawrence, 4-13 to now 11-4. The 49ers story in that NFC West, they're 11-4, and the Bears are 11-4 after going 5-12. What's the best story for you, Mike, of those four teams?
I just think the fact that the 49ers, who have been besieged by injuries, and we've seen it twice before this year, the year after they went to the Super Bowl in 2019, they just fell apart with injuries, and then they didn't make the playoffs. Last year, same deal. They just fell apart with injuries, and the year after they went to the Super Bowl, this year they fell apart with injuries, and they held it together. And I think the key is Christian McCaffrey. Without him, I don't know that they'd be in this position. It dawned on me last Wednesday as we were getting ready for the Seahawks-Rams game. I sat down, I looked at the standings, I looked at the schedule, I looked at the records, and it's like, you know what? If the Seahawks win this game, the 49ers just have to win. And not that it's easy, but right. You beat the Colts, you beat the Bears, you beat the Seahawks, you're the division champion, and you're the number one seed. And it's based on how they look offensively. Now, the defense needs some work, but based on how they look offensively, they beat the Bears. They beat the Bears on Sunday. The following weekend, Seahawks at 49ers is going to be for the one seed in the NFC, and we're going to have, for the second straight year, Sam Darnold on the road against a division rival with the one seed on the line. You know, everyone's like, oh, he's finally delivered in a big spot. Yeah, there may be an even bigger one coming in San Francisco week 18. So the fact that the 49ers are in position to win their last two games and be the one seed when you consider no Fred Warner, no Nick Bosa. They didn't have Brock Purdy for half the season because of a toe injury. They've had other guys. Good luck naming more than two of their receivers. It's amazing that they are where they are.
That is a great call. I am with you. That's an unbelievable story. Mike, listen.
The Super Bowl's in their stadium.
Oh, my God. That would be, That'd be amazing too. Hey, Mike, as always, man, have a great Christmas, and thank you so much. It's always great having you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Great talking to you.
That's Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.